My name is Vern Meekey. I'm the village philosopher. The people who have been kind enough to join me tonight are probably known to almost all of you, but for the record, Gary Sondheim is our village potter. Kathleen Rosales works...
I'm a maverick.
A maverick.
I've been a potter.
Okay, and she is a graphics art person. And brand new to the village, she got off the bus and I told him he had to work tonight. Marty, village musician, right?
For the present.
Yeah. For the present, yeah. And thank you all very much for being here. When Elmer sent out the information to the people that he asked to come up here for various kinds of teaching staff positions, and maybe everyone, he sent out a sheet which showed where he got the theme for this year. Something's afoot in the universe. And I'd like to read a little bit about this because it's the thing that got me thinking about the forum we have tonight. The title for the forum does not come out of here. That's my work. I really wanted to call this session, "If Bach Were Alive Today, Would He Be Doing Commercials for Texaco?" But that seemed even less descriptive than the notion of religion and arts. Has there been a divorce in those two elements, those two activities? This piece is written by, it's a quotation from Matthew Fox. I'm sure you all know Matthew Fox, his book, The Original Blessings. He says in a conversation two summers ago, put on my glasses, with the 84-year-old creation theologian and historian Father Chenu, a French priest, made the following observation. The greatest tragedy in theology in the past three centuries has been the divorce of the theologian from the prophet, the theologian from the poet, the dancer, the musician, the painter, the dramatist, the actress, and the movie maker. Chenu was lamenting the hegemony, that's a 25-cent word, which means the complete dominance, the dominance, the hegemony of the fall redemption theologies, which have not given the image of God prominence in their spirituality, and have therefore denied creativity in place of its place of prominence in our spiritual lives. In other words, he's saying we've been so busy worrying about the fall of redemption that we've quite lost the relationship which he believes used to exist more prominently between the arts and the various forms that he mentions and the church. The artist has indeed been cut off more and more from church life. And as a consequence, church life has been cut off more and more from life itself. And we'll see how you folks feel about that tonight. Is it true that we are really impoverished in our arts? Or is that not true? I think is some room for argument there. The loss of cosmos in religion has been hastened in the West by the loss of those who birthed cosmos, namely the artists in our midst. With this loss, neurosis has increased in both society and religion, and in the artists too. For art has invariably found its roots in religious vision. He mentions Greek drama, the cathedrals in Europe, black spirituals, and it occurred to me too that you see it in the clothing that's worn by the Native American, tends to carry his and her art forms over into their clothing. Certainly you see it in Africa and so forth. A secular society that's devoid of spiritual vision will not produce art but entertainment, and will soon succumb to the selling of the artist's soul, would Bach really be doing commercials for Texaco? Einstein saw this when he declared that the purpose of both art and science is to keep alive the cosmic religious feeling. And then he goes on about that for some more. And then Elmer finally gets to his something is afoot in the universe theme and feels that there's room for renewal of these feelings. I suggest tonight that with the help of our panelists, we explore a couple of these ideas. Is it true that there has been an increasing poverty in both art and in religious expression? Or is that not the case? Secondly, do we need these symbols in order to even think about our religious convictions? Some of the panels that we've had here the last week or so, we've sort of said to each other, you can't really in language express religious conviction. It's beyond the words that we use, the terminology that we use. Last night in the sermon, Pastor DeLange was saying, why does a prophet see visions? I don't know whether that line caught you or not, but it caught me because I was thinking about this, and his response was, probably because the message is more than the language will bear. Well, what do we mean by symbols, and does art provide the symbol to us? And the flip side of that, as the little sheet says, is does the artist really need some conviction of some sort in order to produce artwork? I saw a cartoon once that had somebody looking at a picture, and the artist says to the person, perhaps you don't understand what I'm saying. And the person said, I don't think you have anything to say. That's true. It's a tragedy. No, it's true. And thirdly, it seems to me that we ought to think a little bit or talk a little bit, if you're interested in that, about whether or not art really gets into our daily lives. Do we carry back from our places of worship, for example, or from our worship forms, something that stays with us in its beauty? Is there something in our churches that give us this feeling of poetry or the visual, the graphic arts, the dance? It's been a long time since I've seen a dance break out in the middle of my congregation. We have had a few liturgical dances once in a while. Is that a good idea? And so forth. So those three points, it seems to me, we might talk about. And I suspect that you folks have something else that you want to talk about too. Who wants to be first? Well, back piece.
I'll be first.
We'll start with you.
All right.
Gary.
Yeah, he's got notes.
I wrote a whole report on this stuff. I guess he asked me to speak on this topic, and it's one that I've actually thought about quite a bit, and the idea that words can't express everything means a lot to me, and especially when it comes to God or concepts like God. And there's one quote by Meister Eckhart where he said, our final leaving is when we leave God to find God. And I think what he was saying is that we sometimes our concept in a way of our experience of God, and that sometimes we have a lot of ideas about God. Then I think he was also trying to say that God actually transcends our concepts. So for me, a lot of the arts actually have a way of speaking about things or expressing things that we can't necessarily express in words. And so I really think they have their place in religious worship. And then the other idea is this idea of creation, or that God created the world and that we can experience God directly through creation. So in a sense, by creating works of art, it's like we're participating with God and we're reflecting God, or we're reflecting that creative aspect of ourselves. So those ideas to me are meaningful. And for me, I can experience God directly through creation or through a sunset or something like that. And it's not that sunset has the word God written on it, or it doesn't have the word Jesus written on it. But sometimes, like through the beauty of pottery or through the beauty of just a piece of music, that I feel like I can experience God directly. So it says something about God, or art says something directly about God, or the creation says something directly about God. And I can experience God directly through the creation, or so that for me, it seems to me that the art kind of, in some ways, can communicate things that we can't necessarily communicate through words, or it's actually trying to point at something a lot of times rather than say it directly.
I guess I want to dwell more on the impoverished artist and the artist that's struggling to find some kind of place in the holistic scene of life and being a part of the community. I know that for years, about 8 or 10 years, I've been struggling to be in a part of a community, and I think it has to do with our society, and I think it has to do with just our concepts of artists, you know, the traditional generalistic concepts. And I know just within the last year or so, I've connected it with my own spirituality, and that a lot of people are starting to go towards Native American cultures or Japanese cultures or African, just because I think they embody a more holistic view of how art functions in their society, whether it be clothing or pottery or music or ritual. And that's where I think symbols become a powerful part in their culture, whereas in our culture, I think symbols are more separate. In terms of the conviction, I think there are two. I don't think one needs to exactly have a conviction, but I think it's almost like a journey towards a convicted spiritual awareness, and I think you do make better art with that. There's more of a function, there's more of a uniform or a universal thing. So I guess I tend to think about the function in a more holistic way with community, because as struggling myself, I haven't really felt a real connection in a real holistic way. And lastly, I've been thinking a lot about stewardships too, and I roomed with a biologist last year who was really into the earth and taking care of it and being a simple farmer, and he got me thinking about the tools that I use and the materials that I use. And it's not, I mean, a lot of my materials do come from the earth, and pottery comes from the earth, and pencils are graphite, which is carbon, and a lot of that stuff is integrated. So I want to be a little more aware of how to be a better steward of the materials that I do use, and take care of it. And think of it that it is coming from the earth.
The past 3 years, I've been working full-time to write music for people to worship with. And it's been important value for me. I believe very deeply that art is necessary in the worship experience to express things beyond words. And that because it's our common worship, the art has to speak to our common experience, and it has to be a voice that we can use. I read a book at Holden about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it's still in the library unless someone walked off with it, by Roger Sessions, called The Musical Experience of Composer, Performer, and Listener. And one of the things he said was that the distinct phenomenon of composer, performer, and listener is not that old a phenomenon, that it maybe goes back 300 years, that around the time of the Baroque period, Bach's time, we developed professional musicians, and professional musicians meant that we developed professional audiences. But before that time, people were music makers and music listeners all together. And I think the examples you used, Greek drama, the cathedrals in their earliest sense, Native American music, African cultures, Black spiritual cultures, are all examples of folk art. in which the art belongs to the people and the people make the music. And I've been really aware in mainstream American culture how we are not music makers anymore, at least in the era of music. I don't know about the other art forms, but we don't. We listen to music, recorded music. We listen to professionals making music, but this is Poland is an exception. The average person doesn't make music. Even the national anthem, we don't sing anymore. We have one person sing it, and we all listen. I suppose the last example would be Happy Birthday. We'll hire a specialist to sing Happy Birthday. We'll all listen to it.
And you can get singing telegrams now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I think that carries over into our religious experience. We see ourselves more and more as a passive participant, observing rather than the idea of getting yourself involved, whether it's with your gestures, your body, or your experience, is all sort of separate. And I think art also reflects where the church is. The church is always going through a period of renewal, of a reformation, and then a period of solidification. An example would be the early, after the Lutheran Reformation, the hymns came out of folk art, the melodies were folk melodies, they were melodies of the people, and then by Bach's time they were taking those melodies and making them into chorales and more for specialized groups, and they became more and more divorced from the people. A real experience that hit me hard this year is I'm a Lutheran from background, but most of my music is published in the Catholic Church, so I went to two symposiums this year, a Lutheran symposium and a Catholic symposium. They were for composers in each church. And the big difference was the Catholic Church is going through a reform now. Out of the 30 composers at the Catholic one, every single one presented music for the congregation. At the Lutheran symposium, out of the 24, two presented music for the congregation, and the other 22 presented music for choir or organ. And that said something to me about where the art was going and where their perception is what the art's function was in worship. So.
I see a spinning wheel working back there. Are you an artist?
You betcha she is. I like to think so.
Why?
Well, I guess I tend to think of myself more as a co-creator. I was talking to Kathleen about that this afternoon. I like what I do, I guess that's why.
Nothing like asking somebody to respond to something that you may not have thought about before. I don't know, maybe you have. I see some needle, some Count Cross stitch. Are you an artist?
Follower. Your wife, Chuck.
If you think I'm going to ask the next question.
No, I guess I consider myself an artist. I do a bit of sewing, and when I create something, to me that's creating art. And something Marty said really struck me, as I've been in a couple of churches that I feel have discouraged the people from being artists by this attitude of that everything has to be done professionally. Yeah. The music has to be professional. The banners have to look professional. And so instead of asking people to create from their feelings, they'll hire an outside person to create a banner or a processional cross when they have people within the congregation who would love to do that but are not professional enough. And it might not look as professional. And the excuse I hear is, well, for God we do our best. We get the best we can give.
And then no forgiveness.
Right. And you don't put a mistake in your...
Part of the problem, I think, for me is that these other cultures have retained a sense of who they are as people, and their art comes out of their cultural experience directly. And in America, we have, at least those of us who've been in the melting pot long enough, have started to lose that, so we go to school and take specialized degrees to learn how to create art which isn't representative of any culture in particular.
And what happens to that art? You know, it goes to the galleries and it becomes more and more elitist. You know, the people who are interested in all of that.
And some folk art can be every bit as complex or professional and beautiful in its own sense, but it comes directly from who the people are rather than something they've learned outside of themselves. The best worship experience I think I ever had was in Hawaii, on what was called Hawaiian Homeland. It was like an Indian reservation, and it was a Christian service, but it had such a heavy overlay of Hawaiian, you weren't sure all the time. It was a wonderful, beautiful job of combining dance, and the dance came naturally. It wasn't, like most liturgical dance I've seen, looks like it's imposed upon the service. It doesn't. It's not natural to any of our experience. It's some kind of specialized dance. And this dance came out of their culture, and it meant so much more. And the images of water and fire, because it was their images, was so, so strong.
How many of you have been here long enough to have seen the people interpreting in the Hard of Hearing Week emphasis last week? Did you have a feeling as you saw the hands being used that you were watching art? I really did. You know, fire, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Trees growing down here and so forth. It was almost like a dance. It really was. If you've been here long enough to have had one meal, and I guess you all have, I suspect you've seen some of Kathleen's work. It's in the entryway, isn't it? Did you do the work for Midsummer Night's Dream?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I know you've seen some of Gary's pieces. I have. Marty hasn't been here long enough to put in the work yet. But if you've been to Vespers and picked up the little book down the bottom, says Marty Halligan, and that's a lovely piece of work.
Can I say something about that? The way that got written, I was in the Winter Community, and there was a desire for a Vespers service. And I wrote a draft. Before we started, there was a discussion about what we wanted the Vespers to contain and not to contain. And I wrote a rough draft, and everybody sat around after the Vespers and talked about it, and then I went back and did another draft. So although we didn't have a particular village culture, it was coming out of the experience of the people here and what they brought to it. And so it was not just my experience, but it was an experience in interaction with the community. For me, it was a very good experience in trying to create worship music that came out of a community experience rather than standing out somewhere out in the distance and writing for a group. I think the cultural experiences, art doesn't make sense apart from the cultural experience. And when you divorce it from that, or when the people don't have an identifiable cultural, then the art gets divorced from religion.
I think, too, in a lot of contexts, though, again, it's like our culture has the choice of religion. People actually can choose to be atheists in this country or choose to believe in God. And in a lot of societies before us, there wasn't as distinct a choice. Everybody believed in God. God was the great spirit. There was just much more, I mean, I don't know, you just didn't experience atheism maybe to the degree that you do today. And I think people were motivated by the spirit in a lot of ways. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa between 82 and 84, and I experienced a lot of that firsthand on the village level. Even the village musicians that played the drums, when there were ceremonies, they didn't need to play in a particular way that people were going to recognize the chords as being beautiful or right or anything. They just played as the spirit led them. And the people that danced then as the spirit led them, given the music. So it was even there, it was more like the music and the artistic expression of both music and dance were very much connected to how the spirit was leading them. And, you know, I mean, exactly the way that they look at the spirit and God and all those things could be very different in some ways. But it was still how they believed that the great one, the Almighty, is moving within us as living creatures. And so in that way, and I even think with the Native Americans, I mean, I think Native Americans as general, as a people, just don't have that much atheism. I mean, I think that their society before they had, you know, contact with the white man was that everyone had reverence for the Great Spirit. And it seems like in our society, since we have actually divorced, you know, church and state, divorced God even from the culture in a lot of ways and all of that kind of division, and then people can actually choose to not, you know, identify at all with their spirituality or with God in any way, I think that has also added to this real divorce of religion being an expression of of art being an expression of our spiritual convictions, art being meaningful in symbolic ways that touch us spiritually and inspire us. You know, I think that's where a lot of it has broken down. for all of us, the artist and the and the non-artist involved, you know, for all involved.
And I think it's not only just a choice, you know, between atheism or a choice in believing in a God, but I think oftentimes in our society, there's a real divorce between what you do on Sunday and what you do the rest of the week. And there's a real division. You know, religion is something, you go to church on Sunday, but you kind of forget about it the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. Right? See that existing in culture very much. Just as Kathleen was saying, our art is segregated in museums. It's something you go and see, you know, maybe once a month, maybe once a year, but it's not something that you bring into your daily life. And so I think, you know, especially in our society today, we're dealing with both of those problems. I study medieval art history, and so I kind of tend to view our art as opposed to what was created, you know, in medieval times, where the art was done by unnamed craftsmen, and it was done for a society in which the church was a pivotal factor, and it was a communal art that many people created and many people experienced as a community. And I think that's, you know, kind of coming into what I think that's going to be.
It seems to me that often the artist isn't appreciated until after the artist is dead. You can take like Van Gogh, died in poverty, and although some of his art now sells for $30 or $40 million, and some of the art created today may not be appreciated until much later.
I think artists like to comfort themselves with that.
Yeah, not very comforting to the artists. I hear a lot about starving artists, but some of the famous artists of the past were starving in their day, too.
I could say something about that. That seems like a role that the church can play. I think about like the Soviet culture. Sometimes they'll take people who are really gifted and they'll kind of segregate them and they'll give them a lot of support as far as maybe a real good pianist or something like that. So in some ways it seems like the church can be a... It can really nurture people's gifts, or it can be a place where people can be supported. And one time I remember a conversation I had with Marty once. I just visited him in Minneapolis, and he was just expressing how he was glad that he had the church as an art, as an audience that he could write for. Or he was kind of contrasting that with, say, secular music, where I guess a lot of, it's kind of like the contrast between playing in bars or playing in a cathedral. Or, so in some ways there is more of a shared experience, I think, in the cathedrals, or that kind of environment seems like it lends itself more to being able to communicate certain things. Or, so I think there's a lot of frustration on a lot of artists' parts, because they might have a lot of talent, or they might have spent a lot of time developing their gifts, but they don't necessarily have an audience or a place to perform or things like that. And it seems like the church is kind of an ideal place for that to happen, or they have a lot of spaces and a lot of buildings and things that they can use.
But I just, at least in terms of music, I think there'll always be a tension between art and the church, because, well, a church like the Lutheran Church, for instance, is a very ritual church. And ritual works on us over time. It's the repeating of experience, so that it's used to shape us and nurture us. And art, on the other hand, is always pushing at the edges. And so that tension between ritual tending to want to hold things and put a rhythm up and repeat things, and art trying to break that out of that rhythm. At least I find that tension going on a lot.
I don't know much about art, but didn't artists like Michelangelo get told what they were to do? I mean, did they really have a freedom?
For the most part, in medieval and Renaissance times, that's true, that the program for whatever piece was being created would have been dictated by the patron, which was often the church. And it's just in more recent times that the artist has been seen as kind of independent, creative individual. And it's
I think that, you know, that kind of tension could be shown that they wanted Michelangelo to paint the Sistine Chapel, and it was a very unimportant small chapel, I think, wasn't it? And he was just supposed to, they just wanted to sort of cover this ugly ceiling. And he was the one who took this ceiling and made it into this incredible work of art. I suppose that's what the artist's role is, to take whatever structure you have. It was one of the best known English composers is John Rutter, who's written beautiful religious music. And at one of the symposiums I was at, one of the composers was saying he had had a real shattering experience when John Rutter said on the BBC that he didn't believe anything that he was writing about. And this composer was shattered that this man who wrote this beautiful, Hillary, who wrote This Is the Feast, the Communion Setting, he said, the composer writes to the task. He says, it's good if you can believe in it, but the true artist sees the structure and makes a beautiful work within the structure you have. And especially if you're working for the church. You can't just sort of say, I feel like writing something like this and go off and write it. You have a real definite structure that people's faith experience and the way the church is prayed over time. And the composer or the artist works within that structure to make something fresh and new.
But you talk about participatory work. How do you put that together?
Well, that was what Richard Hiller was talking about, to task. He says, the congregation can sing within this range. These are the intervals they can hear and they can sing well. You can't write 12-tone music unless you can do it in such a way they can hear it. Now, given all those structures, how do you write a piece like This Is the Feast that they can sing week after week and still find inspirational and beautiful? So he has a very limited task. If he had had no structures at all, he could have gone way off the deep end. But he had a very limited structure, and still within that, he produced a beautiful piece of music.
Well, something that was said over here, I don't know much about art. It seems like that's a lot of our problem. I mean, we get to the point where we're so over-intellectualizing art, possibly, as I'm sitting here processing those, maybe because we, as a nation, do not educate our children at a very young age to have art as an integral part of their lives. And I mean all arts, dance, music, visual arts. I see a little bit of a movement that's changing now and moving more in that direction, but it seems like they're offered maybe a few touches of art along the way, and some that are become talented or discover their talent, then develop it much later in life, really, in the upper grades and in college, and it does become an intellectual pursuit. So then you get a church that has maybe some trained artists, and a whole lot of other people that took Spanish or, you know, some other thing, Comac or something else. And it's just gotten so fragmented that you don't even see art as a whole thing. I mean, it's a dance or quiz, probably, and it isn't a holistic approach at all.
Every time I come here, I'm amazed to see the creativity come out of all kinds of people in all kinds of ways, because this community nurtures and supports that and affirms people when they do it. And you see people being creative in ways that I don't think they themselves even saw themselves capable of, because in this environment it's held up as a very high value.
Does any of that happen almost spontaneously in your congregations at Christmas or Easter, or does somebody break loose with something artistic, or
it's probably not affirmed? You know,
have an advent fair, and that was kind of interesting, because people who had a talent in an area, and we encouraged people with real tiny talents, so we didn't make it some big thing, you know, whether it was, then you had to do one thing, maybe cross-stitch or macrame or some real simple thing, maybe make one kind of ornament, all came and shared that with other people, and I thought that was a real positive thing. It was teaching on a real simple level, all age groups, in a real nurturing setting. And that's just one little tiny example. But on the other hand, in terms of music, I see some people in the congregation crying out for music that is non-traditional. It's music that is a feeling kind of music. It's a singable kind of music. It's for people that don't read notes. It's music that you can remember after you've heard it once. And luckily, we're in a congregation that tries to meld a lot of different ideas together. We have Martin's music in our church. And yet other people want to have a more intellectualized version of music. It has to be something you can think about and, you know, don't know how to say this exactly, but a more traditional feeling to it, I guess. It's not the kind of song that, like the Type A community uses, that you repeat over and over and over to get a feeling of community. I don't think that's real acceptable in the Lutheran Church, from what I can tell.
Is the Lutheran Church killing art? In the church?
Our pastor is very creatively, and he puts everything into poetry. He wants to talk about what's happened in the church in the last month or so. You put it in a poem, which I think is really unusual.
It certainly is, as far as I know. I don't think I've heard that very often.
And so we can expect a poem from him at least once a month.
I think we're not gonna change as a society unless more of us as individuals move away from the fanaticism toward productivity and allow for creativity in each of our lives. And I can just really see that a lot of that may even necessitate us as a society having people work more like part-time hours and not be locked in a job 40 hours a week that they're doing, like, they're typing and they're doing things that have creative aspects to them, or whatever they're doing, they're working with machines or whatever, that have creative aspects, but the creative aspects are very limited, and they're not really for the expression of a larger community. They're for, like, profit margins, or they're for, the specific needs of the company, which usually the end result is profit. And basically, in a capitalistic society, a lot of that is, the majority of it is for profit. So it's almost like, unless we as individuals are willing to try to take the risk to be more creative, even in small ways, and sometimes take the time and energy that it necessitates, like, cooking. I mean, everything with food, I know this from being a cook and working with food, that just the whole fast food mentality in our countries, get something quick, throw it in the microwave, pop it in your mouth, and you're full. And it's like, I'm grossly oversimplifying it, but still, in a lot of ways, even the whole mentality of food, it's like, I really appreciate working in the home kitchen, because we can just be really creative with our meals, and, depending on each cook, sometimes we don't even follow recipes. It's like, we just kind of have an idea of how to throw the basic foods together, and as long as you get your spices right, one kind of soup can come out drastically different between the way, Dane, Wendy, or I might do mushroom soup. And it's just really nice that it's really creative there, too, and yet that does take a certain amount of energy, and it takes a certain amount of time and nurturing that. And it just seems like, people generally in society, it's very understandable, are pretty stressed out after, long weeks of work, and they just don't have the energy to even be creative in just daily living things.
You made me think of something about, in every instance in which our culture is not encouraging people to be as creative and as to grow as much as possible, then that area of the church must be countercultural. It must move in a direction contrary to the culture. Mm-hmm. And what scares me a little bit, in my hometown, there are two Lutheran churches and one non-denominational fundamentalist church, which is taking a lot of people away, because they offer an experience of art that is emotional and catches real fast, which is very contrary to what they're experiencing in the Lutheran liturgy. That what is scary for me is that experience is not encouraging them to grow in their faith. It's not encouraging them to be creative. It's offering them a sense of being satisfied right where they are without growing in their faith. Their faith can be the equivalent of maybe a 9-year-old faith. So that's where ritual and liturgy and art has to all force people to grow. And sometimes it's very hard. And sometimes music is not comforting. I'm sure the art isn't comforting. But it's still forcing you to grow. And it's countercultural whenever the culture is against the growth of people.
But I think it's important for the Christian artist to be functioning not just within the church, not just dealing with liturgy, not just dealing with art that's going to be function within a church setting, that they'll be functioning within society as a whole. I mean, that's how Christian artists can impact society, and not just the idea that if you're a Christian artist, your art has to be blatantly Christian or have Christian words. If you're writing a song, that has to have biblical words or whatever, or if you're painting a piece, it has to have Christian symbolism. but just I think that, I mean, if that's what the creative individual is coming up with, fine, but that's not all that Christian artists can create. I think it also has to do with a sense of integrity, and that there are other ways of conveying to society as a whole, rather than just staying within the church community. And I think that that's kind of crucial.
It's interesting that most of us who were raised in a liturgical setting find that sometimes we long for some things that do engage our spirit more than just our mind. But at the same time, within the evangelicals who have raised up and valued freedom, liturgical expression, the expression of people, there is a movement within that is moving toward a more structured liturgical form. I read a book that I like by a person named Weber, who's on the Wheaton College faculty, called Worship is a Verb. And again, if you have to look at why, or what is the role of the artist within our worship, and it is to center us, to bring us to a holistic view of life, and those people in that setting.
I don't believe that ritual has to be something that appeals only to the mind. I think it can really appeal to the spirit and emotion.
I think that was his point.
Yeah.
That's Weber's point, is that that's what it needs to do. And in some places, on the high liturgical side, it is a performance rather than an engaging worship. It can become that. And again, like the evangelicals, the role of the preacher as the center, and that was becoming not engaging the whole thing. And his view is, and I subscribe to it, that it has to engage all body, mind, and spirit. And the role of the artist is to raise that up and engage us totally in our worship.
One of the Lutheran composers of the symposium said that in his view, the problem was high art versus accessibility. And I just don't agree that they have to be diametrically opposite. I think, once again, Richard Hiller's piece, This is the Feast, is good art, and it's very accessible. And it engages the spirit as well as the mind.
Just the word high art, if there is such a definition, you know, who defines that? What is high art? That is a thing that's sort of setting it aside and making it...
I would read specialist art. This is the one who's trained to be a specialist.
Well, what difference is it between art and craft? When does artists become a craft? Or are they all the same? I don't know. My wife has done me now weaving on a loom, weaving something. Is that being art or not a craft?
My wife took pottery lessons in Minneapolis, and the potter had a sign on the wall. I don't know if this is a simplistic definition, but it said the laborer works with their hands, and the craftsperson with their hands in their head, and the artist with their hands in their head and their heart. And I thought the minister does that always in relationship. Hands and head and heart, in out of a sense of gratitude in relationship, would be how I define a minister. So it's an artist who goes beyond it, or as an artist wouldn't necessarily have to be concerned about building relationship through it, although that would most likely be it. But a minister would be someone for whom that the relationship and the building relationship out of a faith experience would be essential. Mm-hmm. To be an artist would be part of that. Whether your ministry is visual arts, dance, music, or even such an art as, you know, pastoral care, it could be an art.
Kathleen, are you doing an art piece or a piece of craft?
It's art.
Co-creating.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, getting back to this idea of risking, I want to test the lady who's just leaving how she felt about the poetry that her pastor shared, because I wondered if that was more of a nurturing experience or more of an intimidating experience. Because sometimes I wonder if... I think that's a fear of anyone, if they are at all involved in an art, that they might actually be just promoting the idea that only an artist can be artsy, and then other people are not willing to risk.
Doris, though, has written a lot of poetry, too, so I don't think...
Speaks for her.
Yeah, in her case, it's probably not intimidating, but you're right, for some people it would be.
One thing we did in our church is we have an Advent booklet in which anyone who would like to signs up to do a page in the Advent booklet and shares a thought, and they can do that any way they want to. They can write out their own devotional, they can write a poem, or just even glean from an artist they admire or quote or whatever, something. That's been an awfully neat way to, we've had a few poets come out of the closet that way, and I think it does affirm people, and I think each year more and more people are risking doing their own thing in that format. And I wonder if there are other ways and in other art forms that we could do that in the church.
Yes, ma'am.
In our congregation, it's mostly a working congregation. Everybody has a job. And I'm an artist, but when I had to go to work, there went my time to help at church with art. And we came up with a solution is that I might come up with a design, and if it's going to be in a banner form or if it's going to be in a wall hanging, we pick people who have good sewing abilities to help create that part. Or we tried to utilize a lot of people. One thing we did is we came up with a design and then had it printed up on numerous cloth-type banners, and we hung them all over church. One design, but printed up, it went real fast. But we tried to adjust to the realities of what we have in our congregation. And some things there's a compromise, but we look at it, it's something fun and enjoyable, and it may not be a great work of art, but a lot of people participated, and that seemed to be far more important than having something perfect.
Is there more art in your congregation today than there was when you were a child, or less?
Well, I grew up in a Presbyterian church that was completely covered in magnificent stained glass windows, and it's hard to compare to one that has plain windows, but I would sit and look at all the windows during sermons. We were given a lot of permission growing up in the Presbyterian church to do things, and we've had one kind of maverick type preacher, pastor who allowed us to do a lot of things in the Lutheran church, from our early service being very contemporary, and it gave us all permission to participate in different forms of worship, and they all were legitimate. And we didn't use the green or red hymnal at the 8:30 service. We used a variety of books in a variety of settings. And in ours, no one is a lector. You say, I'll read the first lesson, I'll read the second lesson. And you stand up or sit down and read it. And it's kept informal. And a lot of people feel very comfortable with that. Our cross was made out of driftwood from the Pacific Ocean coast. We sat on very plain old folded chairs, but we had a beautiful sanctuary. But there was, somehow people preferred to do that, and they sent around a basket, just a bread basket, instead of a nice silver offering plate. And it was just kept very simple. And our, what else did we have? We used regular bread that was made by somebody, and
pottery,
and pottery made by a potter with, that was all used, and that was what we used for our communion.
You haven't been asked to leave the synod yet, huh?
Well, not yet. But
go ahead, answer your question.
Don't tell me.
Yeah, we won't
take
any more about.
Yes.
I think the affirming and trusting part is important in encouraging people to use the talents that they have and that they might have hidden. And that's what I miss where we are now. If you have an idea, you submit it to the worship committee, and the worship committee decides whether it's worth being used in the church or not. And there's the only place where there's the real spontaneity is some of the music people have gotten above that because they need them, you know, they're so talented that they can do anything they want to and nobody has to approve it. But, you know, if you're just a part of the congregation and you have an idea, you have to go through so much to get your idea even thought about that you lose the joy of doing it.
Yes, sir.
No, I was just resting. I'm not resting.
I'm hearing our potter and our graphic art people, and an idea is coming. I'm wondering whether, we talk about affirmation, I'm wondering whether on a synod level rather than a congregational level, we might somehow put money into an artisan for a synod to either help us appreciate the art form or to be with our congregations to do, you know, we have music conferences and symposiums. I don't know that I've ever heard of a other type of art symposium for our congregations.
What do you professionals think of this? Is that, would it be possible for a professional to help a congregation develop appreciation of art in this way?
Or whatever. You know, we do it at home and we don't at home. Why don't we? We have time here. We also have people here. Readily accessible.
I guess I'd like to say something on that. I'm for it and I'm against it at the same time. I'm for it in the sense that it'd be nice to have it appreciated and had it recognized through one person, but where I'm against it is I had a similar experience here where just because somebody found out that I was a graphic artist or I did some graphic art, all of the jobs are coming to me. And I don't think I need to do all of those because I think there's a lot of people here that could, maybe they don't have it with, you know, they didn't know that they could do it, but if they had given the chance, they could have done it. And so I don't think that I should be doing all of the work. You know,
I didn't mean that. Would you be interested at all? I mean, but not you, but mm-hmm. Well, let's say you. Would be interested in being an employee of, on a part-time basis, let's say, of the ELCA of the Northwest Pacific Synod and developing a congregation program in graphic arts?
I guess I don't think I would.
Okay.
Yeah. Mainly because I like to work on the grassroots level, you know, in the sense that...
Well, I mean go to congregations, work with congregations.
Oh, I see.
Help them, uh-huh. help, you know...
Serve as a resource person?
Be a resource in congregations.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that. Definitely.
In fact,
church.
Someone said they have Advent meditations on a daily basis that people contribute, but you could have Sunday bulletins that individuals have done.
Right.
And again, right. It would require setting aside some of the resources of the congregation to spend that money for
right.
that rather than
yeah,
buying the Fortress Press or
exactly.
Oxford Press.
Exactly.
But you could, in fact, encourage
sure.
that same
and
way.
Get the more
church
people involved.
The church
right.
used to support the arts. Now we've added the dimension of involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking
yeah.
that would be
a... Oh, that would be good.
Getting back to this lady's thing where you have to put it through the worship committee or whatever, that really strikes home with me. when our church remodeled, one good thing was the picture of Jesus knocking on the door went, and we've never seen it again. And our old pastor is going to be so happy because somebody donated, and by golly, it was over that door to the kitchen forever. And so when the new remodel came in, one of the things they decided to do is, you know, limit what could be put on the walls. Be very selective. You know, we're going to be color coordinated in those very popular gray and mauve tones that will date our church forever. But what I'm wondering, even with that decision that we don't want to junk up all these nice new freshly painted walls with a bunch of artwork, I wonder if we can set aside a gallery, a space in the church, not so much for the professional artists to show their work, but for the congregation themselves to display things they've done.
Did you have an artist help you with your church?
Professional decorator. Very sort of.
But an artist? An artist?
No, we had no artist. We had an artist in our congregation.
I'm just, you know, I'm just posing that. I don't mean pose it at you, right. I'm just posing it for all of us. You know, do we consider having an artist?
Well,
there's even a problem.
I, Diane's perspective is a little different. There are some people in our church who feel uncomfortable doing artwork because we have an artist in our church, and she's very good at what she does. And they feel intimidated by that. And it's certainly not her fault. It's just that mentality that, well, I couldn't draw something because we have graphic artists that can do it so well. And, you know, so that even happens in our church. It's fairly open to other things. And so I wonder if this idea of having a congregational area, or just an area set aside in the church where people could display poetry or visual art, photography. It doesn't address the music or the dance art.
I knew a music director who started a composer's group within his parish. And he invited, to begin with, 8 or 9 people who played an instrument but had never composed. And the whole purpose behind the group was a study group to study how ritual music was composed and what it was. And by the end of a year's time, 5 or 6 of them were composing music. And several of the things were used with the congregation. And it not only helped them get a sense of how ritual music was written, but it helped the congregation come to appreciate their gifts and value the whole process much more. We don't even ask basic questions like, how do we pray? Or what kind of symbols speak to us clearly? Real basic question. What kind of music helps us pray? What kind of visual things help us pray in our situation? And that whole process forced a lot of people to ask those questions. And you could do the same thing with visual arts, too, if you had one person who was willing to take on that role.
Yeah. Well, we put together some Christmas banners where everyone, it was just at a potluck, but everyone did their own little square, mainly with papers and collage type things. The first ones were really tough, and they started to loosen up. And they thought, well, this started to get to be fun. We didn't say what we were going to really do with them. And people who had no art background did some fantastic things. And then we took them and we made a patchwork banners out of them. But everybody's really proud because that's mine up there. But everybody participated. And people who had no background did a great job. And it became a part of something else. And so you can get people involved, but you can't do it in a threatening way.
Someone said earlier, Sharon might have said, we place a lot of emphasis on productivity and not on creativity. And this group actually came to see the process as important as the result. The process of creating for them became very important because they learned about how to use their faith as a starting point for being creative rather than just to create a product. And that their value was not that they came up with a piece of music, but that they could get in touch with their own creativity.